absorb themselves in the pastimes of the Lord. The Lord himself is doing all these different activities. So then we are allowed to take part. See, if we don't, now if we don't take part in the Lord's festivals, we're going to have to take part in something. We have to do something. The mind must be engaged. There must be something of interest. Because the mind likes variety. So now if we don't go to these festivals, then we have to find something else to do. Prabhupada mentions, and I think one of the Bhagavatam purports, that because of these festivals not being observed now in India, before he said people used to all go to the festival, to the temple in the evening, because so many things were happening. Festivals and classes and different things were going on. He says now in India, not so many go. Not so much stuff is going on in the temple. They don't go. But it's not that they just sit at home and do nothing. No, they watch television, they go out to the movies, they create all kinds of things to distract their mind from the difficulties of the day. It means all day you're working, in the evening they like sitting, you know, something peaceful and nice. So they come to these things. So the idea is the festivals are for this purpose, to keep us busy, to engage the mind. That is what it's for. So now, yeah, so therefore everyone should take part, because these festivals are being done for our benefit. The Archamurti has come for our benefit, not for his own benefit, for our benefit. He's already being served very nicely in the spiritual realm. But here we've forgotten, so he comes in his original transcendental form as the Archamurti, as the Archa-incarnation. And in this incarnation, he accepts our worship, so he gives an opportunity to do the things that they do in the spiritual realm, that we can take part in those activities that they do in the spiritual realm. So that is the purpose of the festivals. So it's come to take part in whatever aspect may be, you know, appropriate for us, doing kirtan or taking darshan or helping with the abhishek or making flower garlands or, you know, whatever is there. So many various aspects are that can engage different devotees with different abilities and different proclivities. So there's always that thing about a festival that engages many, many people. Also, you know, we have the men who have difficulty attending are managers. So that's what he's mentioning here, is that it should be worked out also with the temple management. One is that it fits in with everything nicely. Two, it gives the opportunity for the temple manager to take part in the organization, because they're good at organizing, so then they can help organize the festival. The guests, where they'll go, how they'll go through, what the this and that. And then the pujas themselves, they can be organized by the head pujari. So with that combination, it becomes very nice. Okay, any questions on that? Or? 46. One should not offer incense without offering some flowers. And then Nikshetra's comment. The general principle is that the pujari should perform worship with standard paraphernalia. The pujari may burn incense at any time in the temple, but when he does so during an artik, he should offer flowers as well. So in the artik, the full artik or in the dup artik, then flowers are there along with the incense. Now when incense can be, like you mentioned, during the day, you can just have incense burning all day. When one stick runs out, you put another stick. And this way you can just keep that going. That is not a difficulty. But this is specifically in worship, then there should be both. Because when you find burning incense all day, the garlands are also sitting there all day. So the flowers are there. Now, scent comes from the earth. And that is manifest in the flowers. And then from that, then they take those essences of that. And then they put it into so many things. So the incense we've kind of put together, taking from flowers and other things. So the original scent that should be offered, you know, the of all the scents, then the flowers are the most pleasing to the Lord, because in the puja you have three things that smell basically. You have the incense, you have the flowers, and you have sandalwood paste, you know, or other essential oils. Like that. So all those basically are coming from flowers. Right? So the flower is the most important. If you concentrate on anything out of the 16 items, there's five main items. So the flower is one of them, not incense and not gandha or scents and sandalwood paste. The flowers. So out of that, it's the most important. Like that. Then there's more to the flower. It smells, it looks very beautiful, its texture is very nice, and if it's picture the Lord is wearing the flowers or decorating, and it also has a cooling effect. And so there's so much more there to the flower. So you want to do something nice, and the flowers, one shouldn't just only go for incense and nothing else. Incense and flowers. That's the two go together. 47. One should not fail to offer fresh fruit and grains to Krishna according to the season. And comment. In farm communities, whatever agricultural goods are freshly harvested should be first offered to the deity. As a farm community develops, residents may choose to establish the standard that only fruits, vegetables, and grains either grown on their own land or donated by guests will be offered to the deities. Although this might mean that certain items, such as rice or mangoes, in the case of northern countries, will rarely be available for offering, the deity will certainly be more than satisfied with the devotional homegrown produce, however simple it may be. So here is that the idea is that your different grains, your different fruits, your different vegetables, they grow in a certain season. Because they suit that season. We must remember that the six seasons are coming from Krishna. In Vrindavan, Krishna experiences, he has six different forests that at any time he can go to and experience that season. Right? Because a certain pastime is best in that season. Like Jhulan is always in the rainy season. So when Krishna wants to perform Jhulan, they go into the rainy season forest and have the Jhulan pastime. So if they want to do another pastime, they go to that forest and do that pastime. You know, and then the general pastimes are kind of whatever's the season that's going on. Means when the rainy season comes, then maybe a major dominant activity is the Jhulan. But even if it's not, maybe winter time, they still go into the rainy season forest if they want to swim. So the seasons have been created by Krishna for his pleasure. And in that season, certain flowers are there that match the season, certain fruits and vegetables. The whole app, everything suits that, and it fits those pastimes perfectly. So it's a complete package. Therefore, in a certain season, you offer those fruits, the flowers, and grains that are from that season. Because that's what Krishna likes best. It means Krishna created it like that, so that's the way he likes it. Like that. That's the main point here. Then another point he brings out is that that means, in many cases, that you have to grow your own. Because many times it's seasonal fruits and vegetables aren't always available. Because they only market what is, you know, what people want, or they do it in the wrong seasons, or this or that. They somehow or another either bring from another place in the world or figure out how to get them to grow at different seasons. So if you grow yourself, then it'll be naturally according to the seasons. And then you can offer that to the deity. And if you can, you know, be nicely self-sufficient, the deity will be very pleased with it. Prabhupada mentioned here before when they were growing sugar cane, he said, I should just use that gore and not buy sugar and stuff like that. Just use what we ourselves are producing. And the Lord is very happy with that.
It's like it's good to use Kush oil in the summer, in the winter, also because those things become ripe and good in the season. That's also a connection, isn't there?
Maybe, but I think henna is a group of scents. See, it matches the season. Is that kusa is very good when it's hot. You know, when it's really hot, like the summertime. So kusa oil is then very much appreciated. I think sandalwood is when it's warm, but not too silly. It can also be from warm but hot. You know? But kusa is only when it's very hot. When it's warm, then chandan is also good, and so many others. And then, you know, in season, like I think in the spring or fall, then you can use kadamba, because it's slightly warming, slightly, you know, there's ones that are like that. Then you have like henna is only warming, it just creates heat. So different things are put together that create heat. You smell it, the smell is warm, it's a warm smell.
It's the same thing they use in other oils, but just they differently prepare it. They use different ingredients.
And that I'm not sure. I don't know enough about that. But it has ingredients in it that create heat, like that. So some of them may be the same as some of them, but many of them may be different. It's interesting. Sometimes by a combination, it changes in nature. Like yogurt, if you boil it, it's no longer cooling, it becomes heating. Like when you make curry, it creates heat. Well, if you serve it as it is, without heating it, then it's cooling on the body. You know, like sugar is heating on the body, but rock candy is cooling. So just there's some adjustments in it, then it changes it very much. So there may be some ingredients that are used in other seasons, but when you combine them, they change into something else. That I don't know. We can inquire.
On the previous question, burning incense. When you offer like the burn incense during the day, put out for the deities, do you necessarily have to offer it for the deities, or just anyway you're burning it for them? Or you just light it and stick it into the holder?
You could light it and stick it in the holder, or you can also just light it and kind of like wave it around very lightly and just kind of like show it to Guru and the Parampara and Krishna and then like that, and then stick it in there, you know, and about it. You know, the 3-second artik, you know, that's also not a problem. But otherwise, you can also just offer it and put it there. This is understood if the spirit is just keeping sense during the day. I think all of us do that. In Srinathji, they mainly just concentrate on those 5 main items. So they just burn incense all day. All day is burning all flowers. You know, they put so much in the food, you know, everything's cooked in pure ghee. Everyone sends nice bhog offering. You know, has nice clothes. I think he's constantly changing clothes and doing different things. And nice ornaments. These are the 5 right here.
I had a question on this season of foods in the West. Initially, when the nothing grows. And food and poison of foods were conserved and gems and things like that. And
Well, he's saying this would be very hard, especially in the northern countries. So I think that there's mentions in the Shastras that as far away from the, you know, equator as the coconut trees grow, that place is meant for human beings. Because then that means then all these auspicious trees and, you know, bananas and jackfruits and mangoes and all these things actually are matched to the 6 seasons that will grow. And once you cross beyond that, then it's not meant for, you know, cultured living. Austerity, maybe. Like the yogis may go high up into the Himalayas and all those. That's for austerity. That's not for cultural living, meaning social life. And, you know, elaborate deity worship and all that. That's for tapasya, you know, renunciation and all that thing. And so to, you know, like that. So that's a consideration. So it makes it very difficult. So you do the best you can. It means that if you do have any, in other words, it says, one should not fail to offer fresh fruit and grains to Krishna according to the season. So if you only get fresh things in, you know, 3, 4, or 5 month season, those things must be offered at that time. You know, like let's say in your area that you have in a few weeks when it's cherries, you know, so that will be offered, you know, or certain fruits that grow, you offer those things, or flowers, whatever it is. Then the rest of the time, you just get what you can and offer it. But it's mainly saying that when a seasonal thing is available, it must be offered. If there's no seasonal thing available, you get something, you know, unless you just want to offer snow or something. Yes, large plate of snow or something. Yes, a chunk of ice off the local glacier or something like that. Best quality. It is. That's because for those everything is matched. See, is originally you have rasa. So Krishna is experiencing that, a way of reciprocating with those devotees and the lilas and those. Because I mean, so many devotees are there. So you have devotees that come in the form of mango trees and devotees and jackfruit trees and devotees as this flower, that flower, and then also just creates the variety. Then the devotees themselves in the human forms, then they can collect these things and do things with them. They know Krishna will like this at this time of day, or you know, like on the day you have certain kinds of flowers, at night you have other kinds of flowers. So all the different pastimes, then there's different ways that the different devotees can reciprocate. So all this is all based on this rasa, this whole thing. Now this comes here as deity worship, so we don't know that. It's not coming, it's not natural, spontaneously coming from the heart, and you know, it's not easily understood and learned. It takes a lot of practice. Like in the spiritual realm, someone shows you how to sing. After that lesson, you know that. They want to show you some other new thing, not to show you, and then you can do it. It doesn't need to practice, like here. You know? But because of the devotion, the spiritual, it's just, it works so nicely. But here, practice must be done. Right? Because we're dealing with dead matter. We're getting the voice, which is a machine, to work, and that to relate to the brain, which is a machine. All these things, the nerves, everything like that. It takes a lot of practice to get it to work. Plus, then you have the element of karma, all these different things. So the rules and regulations must be established to see that we do those things that are similar, like what they do in the spiritual realm, as close as we can get without the not having the devotion that they have. So at least our devotion is we try to follow the rules and regulations to please the Lord according to the way they do it. And with time, by doing that, we purify. And that same devotion that the eternal residents have starts to manifest in the heart. Right? Like that. So then in relation to that, then that has all been translated into all the aparavidya. It means paravidya is what we just discussed, the transcendental. Aparavidya means the material. But it is dovetailed in Krishna service. It's in line with Krishna service. In other words, the shastric understandings of things. So then you'll have the Ayurveda and this and that. So then that element comes in the Ayurveda. So even for the material elements, the body and all that, the different fruits and vegetables and all that, that season, then are best for the body at that time. So the Ayurveda also matches all that, though it's just dealing with health. But it's all in line. Because eventually these, it goes back to the spiritual understanding and pastimes. You know? So deity worship is basically a way for us to take part in the Lord's spiritual pastimes. You know, even though we are not qualified, and we don't get on the platform of spontaneous love. So you take that body of the activities of spontaneous love and codify it into a set of standard rules. By following those, at least we're going through the motions of doing that. Please, because we're trying. We're doing it out of trying to please the Lord. So the Lord's desire, he likes it like this, we do it. Is that understood? Okay. 6:48. One should not offer obeisances silently to the spiritual master. Or in other words, one should recite aloud the prayers of the spiritual master while offering obeisances. So, when we approach the Lord wants to know who we are, who we're connected, how we're connected to Him. He is Atmarama. He has expanded His Swarup Shakti. His Surup Shakti is expanded out into all the different other members, leading members of the five chasas. Right? Then these expanded into their expansions. And then the jivas, they are assisting all these different persons. So Krishna, you approach Krishna, Krishna wants to know what is the line to which you come from. Right? This is technically known as the ashray. The ashray means the shelter of love for Krishna. It means the devotee is the ashray of the love for Krishna. But then Krishna is the vishay, the enjoyer. Krishna is the vishay, he enjoys all five rasas in all different aspects. So the devotee is the ashray of that relationship. Right? It means Radhani Krishna, because Radharani is there, Krishna manifests that mood. When Yashoda is with Krishna, Krishna manifests a different mood. Right? You understand? He's the enjoyer always. Depending on what devotee is with him, he will manifest that mood. He will reciprocate in that way. When Mother Yashoda is there, he will reciprocate with her love. As Krishna says in the Gita, I will, as you surrender, I will reciprocate. So you surrender in parental love, he reciprocates that as a child. You surrender as a friend, he surrenders, he reciprocates as a friend. You surrender as a servant, he reciprocates as a master. So like that, that is the whole thing. So he's the ishray, the enjoyer. And the devotee is the ashray, is the one who relates, who has that specific love and that specific rasa and serves in that specific way. He reciprocates with that. So now, Krishna wants to know where you stand. Because then how he'll reciprocate. Because that gives him pleasure. See, just us on our own, we're not going to give that much pleasure to Krishna. Right? But when he knows who is the spiritual master, and then he's serving, then Krishna is, he's serving this one, and serving this one, and that's coming back, and then to whoever is the leader devotee in that line. Mother Yashoda, or, you know, Subal and Sridham, or Rishabhanu, or Srimati Radharani, or like this. Then it gives him pleasure knowing, oh, you're coming with this group of devotees. Right? So we're dear to Krishna because of who we're serving. Therefore it said, Das Anu Das Anu Das. In our Chaitanya says, 1,000 times removed. 1,000 or 100? 1,000 times removed. That pleases Krishna. You're the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. So depending upon which line you are. So he wants to know who you are the servant of. We see in so many of the past times where the acharyas are discussing, like in their songs, where they're meeting the Lord, or in the different pastimes where there's dreams, that the acharyas have dreams and they're meeting the Lord. Then it's asked, who is this servant? Right? And that devotee who's rendering the service, they say, this devotee. They are the servant of this devotee. They have given them to me. Right? Like in the one pastime, it's being asked, who is this nice servant? And they're saying, they're the servant, I think, of Krishnadas. Right? He says, Manjupali. That's Krishnadas. It's Krishnadas Kaviraj. He's the servant of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has given him to me for your service. This is Rupa Goswami speaking. So that very much pleases Krishna. Now he knows what is the line. Right? It's because Rupa Goswami pleases so much, right, in the service. So then, and Krishnadas is so nicely pleasing Rupa, and this devotee is so nicely pleasing Krishnadas. So therefore, that line of that ashray gives very much pleasure to Krishna. So he knows that devotion and that mood is what that is. So if you don't offer, when you offer obeisances to Krishna, you have to say this are the prayers of the spiritual master, so Krishna can hear them. Right? Like that. And then he understands who you are. because you are the servant of his servant who is dear to him. Therefore, we become dear to the Lord. Does this make some sense?
Okay. 49. One should not fail to offer some praise in the presence of the spiritual master. And Krishna Kseta mentions, as in all other circumstances, we should remember that our spiritual master is present while we perform deity worship, and that we are acting as his assistants to serve the Lord. So in the puja,
we're always going to approach the spiritual master in the Purvanga karmas before we actually start the main worship of the deity. So in that preliminary worship, we have to be the spiritual master. We have to offer respect and prayers. So it's just the rule. It must be done. Because Krishna doesn't accept our worship directly. It just doesn't happen. The direct worshippers of Krishna, the places are all taken. So now we can just fall in line in das, and das, and das, a thousand times removed. And that's what gives Krishna pleasure. So if our real motive is to please Krishna, then we'll get it in the back of the line. We have no problem. You know, the front of the line is already there. So it pleases Krishna, not us. Means the internal potency is already there in the front lines. The jiva has been expanded to assist and to enhance the worship that's already being done by the internal potency. Right? That is who we are. So by us assisting, that makes it more nice. Right? I mean, somebody's serving, and that person has so many servants and they're working nicely, that increases the pleasure more. It's a natural thing. Somebody, you have a relationship with somebody. You are coming and doing some service for them. So, because of the relationship, that's very nice. So it's nice. Now, if you come along with a bunch of other assistants who also are doing things and helping you do that service for that friend, that adds to it. But they on their own have no meaning without yourself. Your assistants have no meaning to your friend without you. Because they're your assistants, then they have some meaning in the relationship. Now, with time, they may get to know the person and do things on with the direction. But there's still, the relationship is through. You know? Just like the father with the son. The father with the son, that's the relationship. And that relationship's there. Now, if that son has 10 sons, right? So now the father comes and visits his father. With all his children. Now the grandchildren are there. But the grandchildren only have a relation with the grandfather because of the son. It means their father. They could come and do things directly there. They may render direct service. But it's not exactly direct service. Because the service is being rendered because they are the son of the father. In other words, the grandchild. Otherwise, that wouldn't be. They'd be whoever they were the grandchild of. They'd be serving them, right? And therefore, because they're their son's kid, the grandfather's vision, because it's the son's children, then he has good fun dealing with them and talking with them and playing and spending time and all that. And that adds to the relationship of the son. Son has nice children, raised them nicely. They're very well behaved and respectful and a nice service attitude and speak gently and, you know, like all these things that endears the son more to the father, that the grandchildren means are so nicely behaved and do so many nice services and all this. You understand? That's a very personal, natural thing. Everything's reflected from the spiritual realm. It's not what's going on in the material world is something different. Means in its pure form. Therefore, it's always recommended the Vedic form because it's the pure form of the reflection. Like that. The perversion is we think, even though we're working within the pure reflection, we still think we're God and the enjoyer. That's the perversion. The reflection is not perverted. You know? Like that. But now you can take that reflection, that perverted reflection, and pervert that. Then you can get some pretty weird stuff. You know? You can get some pretty, you know, wild and woolly things. But so that's why it's recommended to have closer, because it's much more easy to understand. The parallel is much more simple. You know, like it may be more. Yeah, go ahead.
The jiva, as I understood, is expansion of Sandhana Shakti. The Sandhana Shakti is serving Krishna, but also Radhana Shakti is serving Krishna.
Sandini? Who said Sandini? Swarup Shakti. Why would there be expansion of Sandini? Sandini is Sat. The jiva is Sat Chit Ananda. They always are in. There's no coming into being. They're always meant. They're always there. Krishna says in the Gita, "Never was a time when you did not exist, nor I, nor all these kings, nor the future." Means the jivas are always there. It's just a matter of whether they're manifest or not. Manifest meaning active, working within the, or either working within the relationship or having the opportunity to make that choice. That is it. The jiva is always existing. See, these points are a little hard to understand because you take eternity and you take unlimited and try to squash it into our deep brain. It becomes very difficult. See, we have this head and we think that's how big our brain is, but we have to understand is we fit in. We're 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair and we sit in the heart. You know? Like that. So what's moving in the life air is there, and the super soul is the size of the thumb. So that's the size of the chitta. And so and that's the life air, and the mind, intelligence, and ego are situated within there. So it's not that big. So it's very hard to stick these things in there. That's what only Krishna can understand. Factually, only Krishna can understand himself. No one else can. Like that. We can get an idea within our sphere that's big enough. We know this is the biggest, you know. The buck stops with God. That's the end of the line, you know. So we can understand these principles. You know, we understand he's the biggest and he's the most beautiful, all the wealth comes from him, all the power, he's the most powerful, he's the most, you know, renounced, he's the most, what? I mentioned beautiful, wealthy, famous, yes, he's the most. Everybody talk, even atheists talk about God, you know, I mean, they all day they're just talking about how there's no God, but just talking about God, so that must mean something. All atheists talk that there's no God. So they're all talking, so Prabhupada makes a point. There must be something to it. If they're all talking, because if they're not, who talks about something that doesn't matter? No one talks about it. I mean, do we ever sit around talking about tsetse flies or something? You know, I mean, who thinks about it? You know, aardvarks, you talk about aardvarks, you know. Warthogs. No one talks about them, you know, unless you happen to be totally into that field or something. You know? But otherwise, who talks about it? But everybody talks about God. So there must be something going on. Right? So the point comes is that we can understand all these things very nicely. That means the Swarup Shakti contains all three, has all three elements. It's just a matter of the personalities that are manifest of this Swarup Shakti. The expansions of the Swarup Shakti to establish all the different things. But then the state, right around there, as the Swarup Shakti, then everything's expanded from there. But it makes it very difficult to relate. Mother Jashoda is also expanding from Radharani. Because everything is coming out of there. Because as Krishna expands as Balaram, Radharani expands as his consciousness. Right? And those consorts then manifest, you know, all the relationships in the four rasas. No, I say three: the friend, the supportership, friendship, and parental. From the sambit, from the sandini shakti, is coming all the relationships that are in neutrality, like that. This is all explained in Samul Niryas. Depending on his rasa, he's Satchitananda, but it's just what will be the main element. It means they're controlling. It's not that he's made out of that. We're not made of Sandini Shakti. We're Tatastha Shakti. We may manifest from there, especially in our state, because we're right at the edge of the shadow, right? Like that. So that the Sandini will have that is existence. Everything based on Sandini. Sandini is the platform of everything's support. Like that, you get the Adhara Shakti. You get, you know, the Brahman. All these things are potency. Then your Bhu Shakti will be sitting on that. So I mean, it gets pretty complicated. But the point is, we are manifesting from the Surup Shakti. It may be in a state from that, from the Sandini aspect, but it's not that we're Sandini Shakti. That's the point. Then, depending, we're Tasta Shakti. Now, depending upon which rasa we're in, then we will be in the fire of that particular Shakti. So if we're in neutrality, we'll be in the fire of the Sandini Shakti. If we're in the parental, parental or friendship or servitorship, will be in the fire of the Samvit. And if we're in the conjugal, then in the fire of the Hladini. Same time as Hladini is creating Krishna's pleasure in any of them. You know? So it's all very much interrelated, because it's all ultimately just have the Surup Shakti. You know? Like that. So that element is like that, but we're a different Shakti, like that, we're coming from. That's why the example of iron and fire is very appropriate, because when iron is in fire, it's fire. It's as good as fire. No intelligent person will say it's not fire. If we say it's not fire, it means iron is cold. In our at least room temperature. So you can touch iron. Now, what intelligent person is going to touch a piece of iron that's in fire? Right? So when the jiva is in contact with the internal potency, whichever aspect or combination of it is that it is, it becomes like that. So therefore, all the jivas that are in the eternal pastimes, they're non different from the internal potency. You know, so they no longer, they're jivas, but they have made the choice to serve Krishna. So they're as good as that internal potency that they serve under. Like that. So that principle of iron and fire even exists in the spiritual world, though it's not iron anymore. The pure jiva is not like that. We're giving the example because in the material world, basically taking the body and like this, and the activities and all. But the what we're talking about is the jiva in the fire of the internal potency. It's part of the internal potency, but it's a specific part. Is that understood? One should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations in worshipping the deity. Gentlemen, comment by Krishna Ketra. To follow the rules and regulations of deity worship, one must, of course, take the trouble to know those rules and regulations. Also, we must guard against the tendency to become lax in following the rules, especially on the plea of practicality. So here, yeah, is very
point is one should not fail to strictly follow the rules and regulations. So these are all from nectar devotion. So these aren't from some, you know, strange shastra somewhere that's just meant for smartas and this and that. These are all from nectar devotion. Just all that's been done is to make them very clear. Then Krishna Kshetra and Banumars have put them together in the order according to Padma Purana in the four different sections so that we can understand them nicely. Meaning the offenses due to cleanliness, lack of cleanliness, offenses due to lack of respect, lack of endeavor. That's the last one. Lack of faith. Like that. So all four are there. The shastras go through all of them, all four aspects. So Rupa Goswami is quoted from various scriptures to bring out all these. And now they've just been put in this way just for the study. In other words, one should also, you know and study the scriptures. So here Krishna is saying, strictly follow. So this is in Rupa Goswami's giving this, and this is given, he has been instructed by Chaitanya. So those rules and regulations that we are given by our Acharya, that we must strictly follow. You know? So what Srila Prabhupada has given us, that must be strictly followed. Otherwise, as Prabhupada mentions, one letter, I forget the devotee, he said, where is the proof of love? We say we love Krishna, but where's the proof if we don't follow the rules and regulations given by Krishna? We have to understand that Krishna is the source of the Pancharatra. Krishna spoke the Pancharatra to Brahma. When he said, what is the essence of the Vedas? Krishna spoke the Pancharatra. Why? Because it's practical, and it gets us out of the material world in our conditioned state. So the conditioned soul, these rules and regulations are very important. For the liberated soul, not so important, because the liberated soul has the opportunity to directly take part in the transcendental eternal pastime. While the conditioned soul does not have that opportunity. He takes part in the pastimes of the Archamurti. Right? And in the Chaitanya's Sankirtan pastimes, is the Bhagavat Marg. But these rules and regulations are required. Otherwise, how do we keep ourselves from becoming contaminated by the modes of nature? A paramahamsa, if he doesn't get up in the morning or doesn't brush his teeth or do any of those things, it's not going to affect him. Because he's not sleeping anyway. He's always thinking of the Lord. So he's not in ignorance. He's just thinking of Krishna. Just the body is resting, because the body is made out of material elements, and it's affected by, you know, fatigue and all these different things. But they themselves, the consciousness is not. They're not in ignorance. So these things don't bother them. But for us, if we don't get up in the Brahma Muhurta and take our bath and brush our teeth and don't put fresh clothes and don't go to the temple, the modes of ignorance and passion are going to catch us easily. So what is to ensure that we don't get caught? It's these rules and regulations. So when we talk practicality, we have to be very careful that we're not avoiding following the rules. If it's practical, some adjustments must be made, fine. We should attain the principle of the rule. That must be obtained. Right? Just like we're out on Sankirtan, so wearing our Karmi clothes, we have to go into Karmi toilets. So we may not be able to practice the standards of cleanliness that we will in the temple. But now the purpose of the cleanliness, these standards, is to remember the Lord. So as long as you remember the Lord, it doesn't matter if you don't have, you know, facility to wash your feet or do so many different things. Because the principle is obtained. But you know the standard, you know you should be, and you feel bad that you can't. But it's practical. You can't, you're in the public, you can't do other things. It's just not possible. You know you should, you feel bad that you can't maintain the standards of cleanliness. But
in that feeling bad, you remember Krishna. So be and do the best you can. At least you try to get your hands washed. You know, so if you can't, you're on the beads or this or that. But unless you understand the principles, as I mentioned, Krishna Chaitanya says, how you'll follow them if you don't know what they are. So unless you've made a study of what the rules and regulations of Pancharatra, how you'll follow it. But then you'll try to attain whatever is the purpose of those rules and regulations. And that is obtained by remembering Krishna. So then it becomes perfect. But if you think just any time, oh, I just is a little quick and this and that, and so I don't follow the proper standards of cleanliness, then and we don't think of Krishna because we just think it's normal anyway. It's, you know, it's being practical, and you know, normal people are practical. So it's just, it's, you know, but in our normalcy, we also become normal. We don't think of Krishna. We're just normal, you know, karmis. Means the mentality. You know, I mean, it's practical in the situation, not because the karmis don't. So then if we get, if it comes to such a platform of normalcy, we don't remember Krishna either. So then what benefit have we gotten by not following that rule? So we can't say that we've replaced the lower with higher. Well, it's preaching proof. Well, as long as we remember Krishna, then it is, yes. If we didn't, okay, we did some preaching. But that preaching would have been better if we'd done the Krishna. So we have to be very, very careful in this. That's the point, is that because the balance is there. Rupa Goswami mentions Niyamagraha, Niyamagraha. We have to be very careful of both of these things. We're so into the rule, we think the rule is actually the thing. No, the rule is for helping us reawaken our love for Krishna. That's the only purpose of the rule. To help us reawaken by doing these things that the residents of the spiritual realm do. Right? And, or we throw them all out because it's not practical. But Krishna himself has made these rules. He spoke Pancharatra. He spoke it to Brahma. Brahma spoke it to Narad. Narad spoke to so many others. You know? So like this, any time the Pancharatra has been lost here on the earth, it's reintroduced by Narad Muni. Therefore, we call the whole body of Pancharatric knowledge Narada Pancharatra. So there is one out of the 108 Pancharatras called the Narada Pancharatra. But we many times refer to the body of knowledge as Narada Pancharatra because Narada has revealed it to the humans. It's never lost in the higher planets, but it sometimes gets lost here. So it's reintroduced by him. Yes. Yes. It means it's just how you where the emphasis is according to the time, his place, and circumstance, and different things. Different. They all describe so many different aspects. Like the Gita is, see, say, you have all the Shastras, right? You have the Vedas. The essence of the Vedas is given in the Pancharatra. I mean, excuse me, is given in the Upanishads. Then that essence of Upanishads we find in the Bhagavad Gita, called Gita Upanishad. It's the essence of that. Then that comes down. Then we see that the essence of the Vedas, after hearing the Vedas, Brahma asked, what is the essence? Krishna spoke of Chaturshluki. So, right? Or excuse me. And then from the Upanishads also, then you get the Vedanta Sutra. It's the essence of the Upanishads. So you get the Gita, Gita Upanishad, and the Vedanta Sutras, essences of the Upanishads, which are the essence of the Vedas. So you have the four verses, the Chaturshluki. Then that is the essence, and that is then was expanded upon with the Bhagavad Gita. So it is also the essence of the Veda. They're all the same. They just come from different angles. You see, Gita is more emphasizing the Sambandha aspect and how to, and then one has performed devotional activity in a certain mentality following the rules and regulations. Right? Gita is basically some of the main conclusions of the Gita is perform your prescribed duties in a detached way, in knowledge of what is actually happening between ourselves, the material world, Krishna, and the relationship, and with a desire to please Krishna, doing it for Krishna. Right? So now, but that he doesn't get to describing so much prescribed duties. He touches a little bit on it. What the different varnas do and the different ashrams, and that. He touches on it. But the full details you find in the Bhagavatam. So it's just, in other words, Gita is for removing the doubts and the misgivings that are there that keep one from surrendering. Because what is, after all that, then what's his conclusion? Become his devotee and surrender. Right? And then where does Bhagavatam start? It starts from that point. You know? Means the first shloka is the introduction. The second shloka says we kick out all the cheating religions, which was then the 66th verse of the Gita, which is basically the last instruction, specific instruction. So it starts with that, and then what's the next verse? It starts taking rasa, which was the verse before, 65. Right? So Krishna says, become his devotee, and how do you do this? By giving up all the religion that has nothing to do with Krishna. And then Bhagavatam starts with, we kick out in this book, we kick out everything that has nothing to do with Krishna, and the next verse is rasa, means relationship with Krishna. And now it specifically gets into the aspect of rasa. So how to perform? It means Gita is for everyone. Bhagavatam is only for devotees. So once you've decided to become, take those instructions seriously, then you read Bhagavatam. Right? So then Bhagavatam is the essence, therefore it's called a natural commentary. It's not said direct commentary. It's an actual commentary, because it's the essence of the Vedas, explained in the full form. Vedanta Sutras in Sutra form. No explanations. Explanation means you take that and expand it out and give full meaning and examples and, you know, you illuminate the point. So Bhagavatam does that. So it's the essence. And then the Pancharatra is also the essence, because it is the body of those prescribed duties, you know, specifically on the platform of sadhana. That helps us control the conditioned nature and reawaken our spiritual consciousness. So it's the practical. When we talk practical, we say it's practical prabhu. Pancharatra is the most practical because it reawakens our love for Krishna by using mechanistic systems that we can adjust with. Right? We're not adjusting with sitting down and chanting the holy name all day. It's the Bhagavat mark. You just sit down and start chanting three lakhs of names every day. You know, it's very simple. Don't bother about eating. When something edible comes along, you eat it. When it doesn't, you fast. It's the Bhagavat mark. Now, if that's not practical for you, now what are you going to replace that with? That's the Pancharatra. Pancharatra. And then if that's not enough for you, you still can't just absorb yourself all day and in following at least those aspects of the Bhagavat Marg that you can. You know, we chant how much we can, we preach how much we can, we associate with these main elements. Then we follow the sadhana how much we can. But if still that's not enough, then what's the next step? Is Varnashram. And that's what Krishna says in the Gita very clearly. So then Bhagavatam shows how those are done. Right? And the Pancharatra gives the rules. Pancharatra gives the rules to regulate this in our little day-to-day things. And then the Bhagavatam then shows what the essence of that Pancharatra, the essence of the Varnashram and all these things. I mean, someone may complain, well, in the Bhagavatam there's no Pancharatra. Means, you can say there's no Pancharatra, means the mentality is not Pancharatric. It's coming from the Bhagavat. But we must remember that we just spent the last so many discussions on the 11th canto where Krishna describes to Uddhava the process of deity worship. You know, as far as I understand, Bhagavat Marg means just chanting Hare Krishna. And deity worship, that's the Pancharatra. And in the Dwapara Yuga, the process is Pancharatra. So it can't be so bad, because in that age, then we see that the devotees worship Krishna, that they worship in person. We see they follow all the things. Mother Yashoda feeds Krishna, bathes Krishna, dresses him nicely, nice garlands and ornaments, and you know he wears all his different things. You know his different his upper cloth and lower cloth. You know idam utariyavastram and all these different things. And you know she creates him a nice sandalwood paste. You know Aishaganda. I mean it's all the things that are there that Mother Yashoda and the gopis and his friends are doing for Krishna. You know, feeding him, giving him places to sit, making sure he's comfortable, and washing his feet, and doing all these different things. Then it comes to us in codes. Like that. For them, it's just spontaneous. So if we see this line, then it makes it easier for us to understand how we enter into this so that we can apply it according to the time, place, and circumstance. Then we can avoid this niyamagraha or niyamagraha, where we just throw it out because, well, it's not practical, Prabhu. Then you have to replace it with something. If I just wash my hands after going to the toilet, what am I going to replace it with? Why am I not doing that? Because I'm in a Western public toilet. And who doesn't wash their hands after going to the toilet? It means many people do. They put sinks there, and a lot of people do now. But some don't. It's not that important. You know, you heard about it when you're a kid. You're supposed to do it, so you do it. But it's not like necessarily a burning value in your heart. You know, if you're out on the road and you just got to go, you just take a leak on a tree and nobody washes their hands. You know, because there's no sink there. It means as you walk out of the toilet, there's a sink there, so you walk by and wash your hands like that. So you have to replace it with what? A Western cultural value. You understand? I mean, the living entity is going to have a code of conduct and values. It's no question. If he doesn't have, he's not human. If he doesn't have, he's not even a living entity. Manifest. Maybe he's a rock, but rocks must have their codes also. You know? But we see even the animals have theirs. Those have been fixed for them. It goes with the body. Dogs have their way of behaving. Cats have their way of behaving. Cows have their way of behaving. It's fixed. You know it's a dog because it always does the same thing. Right? Because they have their code of values. Right? You put out an apple, will the dog run over and eat it? No. It has no value to it. You put out an apple, now will a cow come over and eat it? Yes. It's value to them. So they have theirs. So a human being must have a code of conduct. But they can choose from any of the 8 million 400,000 species of conducts, or they can choose a transcendental conduct. But you have to have conduct. You're going to do something. You're going to have some system. Right? You're going to have some system. That's the point. So then the recommendation is use Krishna's system, which is the Vedic system as given by the Acharyas, and the Pancharatric system, which is also given to us by the Acharyas. Right? So by combining those two, you end up with a wonderful culture and values and etiquette and everything. You have to follow them how they're given. You can't misuse them. You know? That's the point. You can't misuse them. If you misuse, then it's a disservice. Okay, 51. One should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some sound. It means the Lord likes that we make some sound, draws attention. Just like we're sitting someplace, we don't like it if just somebody walks in unannounced. And then suddenly they're there. Because the Lord is of course, we can see the Lord, he knows everything and all that. You know, the Lord is all-pervading, omniscient, omnipotent, all these things, yes. But then, what do we got to do with it? That reminds us to stay in our room. You know? Krishna knows our prayers and this and that. But then we should just stay in our room. We shouldn't go out to do this and visit friends and go do so many things. Because why do we have to do anything? No, because we have to do activity. Therefore, Krishna says, do your activity in relation to Him. So we want to go someplace. We want to do something. So we should go to the temple. So now, when we go to the temple, the Lord is also performing pastimes. He's the least pleasurable of His aspects is sarvakya. He's totally aware of everything. Most pleasing is where He's dutta, where he is absorbed in the pastimes with His devotees. So when we have deities there, Radha and Krishna, Krishna is absorbed in pastimes with Radharani. So when we come, then we have to make some sound and let it be known that we are coming. Then Krishna will relate to us. Otherwise, then it's not nice. We're not taking Him as a person who has feelings and has, you know, like to interact in a certain way. This is just the way Krishna likes the interaction to be. You know? We see everybody has their different things. Like even, what do you call it? Madhu Mangal, before he comes, he's always making some big noise or big sound or something, you know, like that. You know, he's always doing something. You know, he's the joker. Before he enters, he always makes some joking thing. You know? Like this. So there's always something happening. Yes. You understand? Because that identifies who the ashraya is, as we mentioned before. Identifies who's the one is coming. And Krishna knows, I relate like this. They surrender in this way, I reciprocate.
I think this I can understand when Krishna sees us. But how
that he has sarvajna, but there's also the aspect of he's the master or the servant. You understand? Because there's relationship is there. Rasa means relationship. Sarvajna just means he knows. So there's no specific relationship. He's just God. But then he knows all those things. Then how do we serve him? So Vaikuntha, then we can serve in neutrality or servitorship. So those aspects must be there. So the yoga mind is involved. We discussed the other night, if the one reverent is so much, here's God, you can do anything for him. So even in Vaikuntha, there must be a slight touch of yoga maya there, so that they can go near the Lord and do different things for him. They know he's God. But the reverence isn't so great that they can do nothing, I am so useless, I can't do anything. Right? There has to be something that there's enough that they have the confidence that they can go before the Lord and do different things. So some that yoga maya has to be there. Something. You seem to be bewildered. Oh. Doing okay? Okay? Does that make sense? So the rule is to come and knock on the door and say goodbye and ring the bell or like that, something. So that's called prabodhana. You ring the bell, you say some glorification, you offer obeisances and identify yourself as the servant of your spiritual master. So that is one of the 64, one or two, those are, I think, two of the 64 items in the deity worship. So the positive side is that. See, all these are things you shouldn't do. I think Krishna Kshetra points out in another area. Now the other side of it, so you could look at it like this way, 51. One should not enter the temple of the deity without first making some sound. So this is in the list of offenses. Now on the list of the 64 items is, when you come to the temple, you make some sound. You know, I glorify the deity, I identify yourself. Right? So one is the positive, what you should do, and this is what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't go in without making some sound. So what you should do is go and make some sound. Understand? So both sides are there, the positive and the negative. So the offenses will always be the negative, and the other is positive. So it's very clearly given from both sides, so you can't go wrong. The problem comes is like those who are too absorbed in the rules and regulations many times don't connect the two. They just see it as more rules and regulations. No, there's the positive, the negative. You know? So you connect it. So there's something common between them. You understand? Like here, there's 64 offenses. the 64 items to be done. How much the 64 and the 264s connect, I can't say. But they will be, you know, whether it's overlapped, this and that. But the point is that the negative is it means things you shouldn't do. 645, one should not fail to observe the various festivals for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Then in the 64 Acts, it says one must observe festivals such as Janmashtami and all that. Right? If you don't, it becomes an offense. Right? Yes.
When the food of the deities are closed, you can pay everything.
That we don't do. This is you're drawing the attention. Yeah. It means when the deity is open. When the deity is not open, then we don't. Don't do that. Right? Because he's already doing something else. Yeah, because the point is that see, that's why one must understand the purpose of the rule. Otherwise, someone who is very absorbed in the rules will be doing it anyway. It's cool. But why is it the rule? Because Krishna is a person. When he's giving darshan, when he's relating with those who are in the temple room, then it must be done. Because then we are coming and identifying itself as the servant. Right? Drawing his attention and identifying himself as his servant and glorifying the Lord. When he's closed, he's doing other services. Jaris are offering boga or dressing him, bathing him, or waking him up, or putting him to rest, or he's spending, you know, the night with the, you know, the eternal servant and all this and that. Right? You understand? So that time that service is going on, so we don't distract with what we're doing. Just like if someone, two people are having a conversation, that conversation is going on according to their you know, their service, their relationship and all that. I don't suddenly just walk in and start talking about what I want to talk about and just completely disregard that. Some people think that's rude. Right? So Krishna is accepting those other services so we don't intrude. But when he's giving darshan, that means he's can deal with everyone. Because he is Sarvajna, therefore he can deal with everybody there. He's unlimited. But he still does it in a personal way. You know? So each and every person can offer prayers and be doing something and be reciprocating with the Lord. But it's still done in that personal way. Because Krishna is a person. It's very important to understand this personal aspect. Because many times when we deal with talks about the person, the spiritual master, the Supreme Lord, then sometimes devotees think that you're bringing it down to a mundane platform. Because the idea is material means personal. And spiritual means impersonal. Krishna is a person. It means all this is going on at once. He's God. At the same time, he's a person. He wants to reciprocate with you on the platform of Rasa. So it means as individuals, living nicely with each other. And he wants to see the different devotees deal nicely with each other, based on proper relationships. So this doesn't lessen, this makes it more glorious, more wonderful. But he's so, even though he's the greatest, the original person, he still is so interested that he's come as Archamurti just to reciprocate with us. Just the simple, you know, lost soul in the material world. He's coming, he's spending his time just to, you know, come and hear our prayers. You know, hear, you know, accept our obeisances, you know. Man-man-abhava-mah-bhakta-om-yajim-am-namaskaru. You know, as we think of Krishna, we become his devotee, we surrender to Krishna. Makes sense. So that's very important that we understand these things, these personal aspects. Because the spiritual is something different. We discussed in the temple the other day. Is the material world is actually, from Krishna's vision, it's just one of his energies. It's an inferior energy, and we're superior to that. But because we become bewildered by it and attracted to it, therefore it's identified as the material world. You know? And we're trying to get ourselves unentangled in it. For the Paramahamsa, he's here. This is Krishna's energy. So whether he's in this you know, inferior energy, or in the superior energy of the spiritual realm, he just sees Krishna. He doesn't see anything else. He doesn't change his opinion, or change his mood. He doesn't become the enjoyer. Because of our conditioned vision, therefore so much emphasis is putting on, you know, getting out of here, breaking free from here, this and that. What it means is breaking out of the condition, the improper understanding, the illusory understanding that we are the Lord and enjoyer of this material nature. As soon as we understand that Krishna is the Lord and the enjoyer, then there's peace. Then we're happy. Then we're on the platform, liberated platform. Then from there, we can develop our love very nicely. So it's a technical of which angle you're looking at it from. So we have to understand that that's there. The working is the material nature, how it works. It's carried out by the modes of nature. The three modes of nature carry out all the activities here. If one is conditioned, then Durga or Trigunamayi may be doing the work. She may be controlling the modes of nature. And to that degree that we're spiritual, or when we become fully spiritual, then Yoga Maya. So Mahamaya, Yoga Maya, one of them is pushing the modes of nature around. So for the pure devotees, Yoga Maya does it. Right? For those who are not on such a platform, or the materialists, then Mahamaya is doing it. But it's just whose direction it's under. So Mahamaya means it's indirectly under Krishna. He tells her what to do and lets her does it. So it's just when they do this kind of nonsense, then this is how you deal. When they do these pious activities, this is how you deal. Well, Yoga Maya, then it's all when it's all in connection with Krishna. Then she does everything. She controls everything. So these are very, you know, subtle technical points. That's why Krishna in the Gita is mentioning that one should perform with knowledge. One should understand how the material world functions. How would it function? In the spiritual realm, that is fully just done with the external potency doesn't have to be involved. It's not manifest. It's like to that degree we're surrendering, to that degree it's Yoga Maya, to that degree we're not, it's Mahamaya. Yeah, yeah. You have to understand it's the same person, it's just a reflection of that person. Understand? It's the same person. It's just whether they're dealing with you intimately or whether they're dealing with you formally. You know? In other words, you act devotionally, then you get a devotional reaction. You act materially, you get a material reaction. That's all. So if you act devotionally, then Yoga Maya acts. You act materially, then material. Like that. But it's still the three modes of nature that are pushing your body around. Like that. Even if Yoga Maya is the one controlling it. Right? Because we have a material body, so it's pushed around by the three modes of nature. Three modes of nature, open and close, like Krishna says in the Gita. Opening and closing of the eyes, you know, the breathing, evacuating, and all these digesting, all that's going on by the modes of nature. He's not saying only for the conditioned soul, he just says that's the way it is. Those who have a material body, means made up of these elements, The material modes of nature take care of it. Now, for those who are on the transcendental platform, that body is in the fire, spiritual fire, because it's always engaged in Krishna service, so it's spiritual. Right? So yoga maya is taking care. Right? But still, the three modes of nature are dealing with the functioning of the body. But that's being done under the direction of yoga maya. So the result is spiritual, meaning that the devotee in that situation never forgets Krishna, is never disturbed by anything. Does that make some sense? Or? So very problem is on these things that you're. See, this is the element of tathāgata is two things. You have to be able to see the two. So there has to be some system for spiritual to meet material. You know, just like having Krishna's pastimes. Krishna is dealing with the devotees in Vrindavan. That's the spiritual world, right? There's no material nature there. But then in walks Agasura. Agasura is a conditioned soul, a material body. But the pastimes Krishna performs in the material world are a junction where the spiritual realm can meet the material realm. And the living entity can make a choice. Right? So you can see the activities of the materialist, you can see the activities of the pure transcendentalist, and you can make the choice who you follow. Right? Therefore, the reflected prescribed duties are very similar. You don't see that those who are coming from somewhere else, when Sanda Baba goes to Mathura, and there's so many other people there that are materialistic, they're all working within the same culture. Just the one is doing it for Krishna, which is his pure form, and the others may be doing it for themselves, which is his perverted form. But the reflection is the same, right? The tree on the bank and the tree in the water are the same kind of tree. You know, you have a mango tree from the bank, and you look in the water, you see a mango tree. Now, you don't see something else. You don't see a rhinoceros. You know, you see a mango tree. But it's perverted in that you can't get anything out of it. You know, there's nothing you can get from it. It's only 2D, it's not 3D. You know, there's no substance to it. So like this, it's perverted. And our mentality, we want to enjoy that tree in the water because we're not allowed to enjoy the trees in the banks. Because that's Krishna's enjoyment. And that tree will allow it. Because that tree is a transcendental personality. They're not going to allow it. Therefore, we see material nature. We see the reflection. So that's why it's recommended is that you understand that this is a mango tree. And don't try to turn it into a rhinoceros. That's why the Vedic culture is considered the superior culture for humans. Because then it's very easy to move with the spiritual culture. The Vedic culture moves very easily with the sadhana and with the platform of pure devotional service. While other cultures can be engaged, but it's harder to connect them all. It's harder to connect, let's say, the Western system of going into the toilet, you know, dropping your pants and sitting there and reading the newspaper, and then after pulling your pants up and washing your hands and walking out, you know, after using some smear paper to clean yourself. Right? It's hard to reconcile that with the aspects, elements of sadhana bhakti, where you have to be very clean. So it can be done in the beginning. It's a platform. So you sit in the bathroom and you read Back to Godhead instead of, you know, something else. You know? But with time, then you learn that, you know, Back to Godhead doesn't like being in the toilet. You know? Like that. And so then you come up and then you don't read Back to Godhead in the toilet. Then you start to read it out because you have to respect now for the magazine. Before you had great interest, but now you learn that there's also some ways of dealing. like that. So then slowly, slowly you improve that culture. But it's a starting point, there's no problem. Wherever you start from, it doesn't matter. Once you engage in Krishna service, it becomes glorious. But it doesn't mean that you stay on that platform and just say, well, that's good enough. You can, but then next life you'll have to continue from that point. You know what I'm saying? If you want to progress, you have to progress. So you either just progress from that point, you know, in this lifetime, or wait until next lifetime. Or you have to progress. As long as you understand the principle and are acting to obtain the purpose of that, you know, it means the goal of that principle and the active element of that principle, that benefit is there. You know, because according to time, place, and circumstance, you apply it. So that time, place, and circumstance is not favorable. Then you may have to just stick to the principle and adjust the detail for that time. But the principle always remains. Right? Just like someone is doing something for somebody. Right? Let's say that I have affection for somebody, I want to buy them a gift. So I've decided I'm going to buy this particular gift, you know, because I have to, you know, I'm on my way to their house. Now I planned I'm going to go down this street and that street and everything like that, and I'm going to get to this shop and I'm going to buy this particular thing. Maybe I go there, there's a jam. I can't go down that street. I don't have enough time to, you know, leave my car, get out and walk around or this and that. So then I make another plan. Okay, in that case, then I'll go to this other shop, which is down this other street, and I'll get this other thing. Right? Because I understand the principles, I want to buy something for my friend, I do it. I may adjust, you know, the way I do it and this and that, and instead of buying, you know, this particular item in this shop, I bought a totally different item in another shop. You know? You understand? But the principle remains. So that means the relationship remains. When I go there, I have a friend who brought this gift. But now if I just go by, you know, modern practical, I go down that street, I can't forget it, you know? So then I don't buy anything. I just go around whatever's the easiest way to get to his house. It's not practical. So it's fine, but how deep is the relationship then? Right? The relationship doesn't get that deep. I didn't take that endeavor to attain the principle. I got to his house. I got there. But I was trying to go there with a gift. So that was lost. I could have gained it just by, I also get there, but just taking a different road around and that, and I also get a gift.
So it's a matter of consciousness.
It's a matter of consciousness. Or if nothing else, I couldn't get, when I get there, I said, I was trying to get this and that and so many things, I just couldn't, I'm really sorry. You know? So at least that much is there. So the attempt was there. And then, no, that's okay. But the relationship is enriched. Otherwise, it's just it doesn't matter anyway. Then it's just it doesn't enrich anything. It may have been easy, it may have been practical. So the point is the rules, and regulations, their purposes we must try to achieve. Yeah, so we make that endeavor. No? That's this section is offenses due to a lack of endeavor. The whole point is we must make that endeavor because it pleases Krishna. Like it may be cold in the morning, so we don't want to take a bath, so we can just say it's impractical. So then, but if we understand the point is we must be clean, then we can say, okay, it's freezing cold, the water is freezing cold, and you know, you get sick, this and that. So then, the principle is you must be clean. Therefore, we may, you know, install a heater to make the place not so cold, or warm the water or something, we will take the bath. Because the principle is that we must be clean to worship the deity. So you can maybe say, well, it's not practical, but why would we be saying that? Because a person in the mode of goodness must be clean. They will take a bath, some way or another, because it's valuable to them. So in the mode of passion, ignorance, it may not be so valuable to them. So they don't mind skipping and not taking it because it's practical for them. So your practical will also be in relationship to your values. Right? So if my value is that I must be clean because it, you know, it pleases the deity, then I will find a way to do that. I will put my endeavor into arranging facilities in such a way I can take a bath. So that it's done. You know? But I also understand the principles of the benefits of cold bath, commit to that. So therefore, I just because I take hot baths, just take a hot bath, and then, okay, I've done it. So I've done it. I'm taking the bath. So that's better than not taking the bath. It still has its opinion that I'm taking a hot bath because I like hot baths, rather than I understand that the nature of the cold bath. So instead of it being, you know, minus zero, you know, somehow another mystically liquid ice, you know, it may be warmed up to something, you know, a bit more, you know, but it's not hot. It means I just bring it up to just like a neutral state or like that. Or if I use the hot water, then I finish with cold water. So I know the importance of it. I know the benefits of it. Like that. So I will somehow or another deal with the whole thing very honestly and not bring my own personal things into it. Yes, that's why. Yes. Go ahead.
That will require careful understanding of this.
Yes. That's what Krishna Kshetra makes the point is to follow the rules and regulations of deity worship, one must of course take the trouble to know those rules and regulations. That's the thing. He's saying because many devotees who say it's not practical actually don't know what deity worship is. I mean, actually just don't know. They think deity worship is just you wave around some incense and make some offerings, and, you know, and that's it. They do not actually understand that our whole process of how we live, dress, and behave and all that is part of the deity worship. Because sadhana bhakti is very connected with the deity worship.
And it's so funny. It doesn't really matter where you are in the world if you had that understanding.
That's very important. Because Krishna understands it's difficult. You do the best you can, but you're trying to do the best you can. Right? You want to buy some nice gift, but you end up in the 88-cent store. You know? So, I mean, you know, you're only going to get, oh, I don't know, this is the 88-cent store now. It must be a lot more now. I don't know what it is now. When I was a kid, it was the 88 cents. Everything in the store is 88 cents. Everything. Whatever it is, everything costs 88 cents. It must be a lot more than that now.
When they have the £1.50p shop.
£1.50p shop.
Yeah.
Means everything is just that much. Yeah. So, you know, okay, you want to do it, but that's what you ended up on. So that's what you, but ultimately, it's the thought that counts. But it must be sincere, yes. Must be a sincere thought. Like that. And that's going to come from maturity of understanding, which means you have to know, you have to take the trouble to know and understand. So it's part of the process. It's just study. Study is part of the devotional process. Very seriously part of the devotional process. Yeah, many times you don't, because the point is, generally when you find devotees saying it's not practical, but what do they practically do? They do something that's straight out of their own culture that they grew up in. So that also, you had to be trained in. I mean, kids don't sit peacefully at the table, you know, and not put their elbows on the table and not grab things with their hands and not eat with their mouth open and not talk loudly about all kinds of disgusting things and like that and not get up and run around and then come back and eat. They had to be trained to do that. So if you don't do that, devotees will say you're uncultured. Western devotees will say you're uncultured if you don't follow those things. But that was a matter of training. That didn't come naturally. So you had to be trained, reprogrammed into that. So the point is being asked to follow Krishna's program. So it's a matter of, if we say it's not practical, what do we fall back on? That's the thing, because the living entity must have some form of code of conduct. It must. Even if it's the roughest, nastiest street gang, they still have, you know, a uniform that they dress in, a way that they deal, a language, a handshake. There is a code of conduct. You can't live without it. That's the point. The conditioned soul cannot live without it. So it's just a matter of what you choose. That's all. That's the choice. As in the Tathagata Shakti, you have the choice. Do it for Krishna or not. And in doing for Krishna, it's recommended that you do it in Krishna's way. You can also do it not in Krishna's way. You know? Like that. Because Prabhupada says, better to be an honest sweeper of the street than a charlatan, you know, spiritualist. Like that. So to be following the spiritual, you know, activities simply for your own mundane benefit, then Krishna says it better to just be a gentleman. You know, and just, you know, be an honest person. Do what you can do for, do what you can do, and that's it. Be honest, nice. But Krishna says that also in the Gita. If you can't do all this kind of spiritual activities for him, then at least be a pious person. You know, at least don't give any trouble. But if we want to talk practical going back to Godhead, then the most practical thing is to follow these various rules. That's what they're given. Your devotion is there to help us go back to Godhead. Sanatana Goswami's instructions are there to help us go back to Godhead. That's what they're for. These are very practical points. Lord Chaitanya has spoken the essence of all the Vedic literatures in these two ways. In the Anasideya Tattva. That is the ritual aspect of it, and the devotional understanding, those things that cultivate, you know, in other words, the cultivation of the attitude. They're both basically the same thing. Just the emphasis is slightly different. Rupa Goswami says, chant Hare Krishna. Right? Sanatana Goswami will say, chant Hare Krishna on beads, there's 108 of them. They go from big to small. Right? You put them in you keep the beads covered. You know, you don't just hold the beads in your hand, they're in some kind of cloth, a bag or something. Like that. So it's the same thing. It's just taking different aspects. Rupa Goswami will be talking about the glories of chanting, why one should chant, and all these. Sanatana will be giving the different rules and regulations that go with that. So it's a perfect combination. And, you know, that's why here it fits very nicely, all these seva aparadhas that have been taken out of the nectar of devotion. Yeah. Like Rupa Goswami mentions that when he gives all the rules and regulations of devotion, of sadhana bhakti, he's taken it from Hari Bhakti Vilas. The principles he's taken from Hari Bhakti Vilas. And he mentions that the details have been given there, so he's just going to talk principles. The two go together. Therefore, Krishna Chaitanya makes a point. To follow the rules and regulations of deity worship, one must, of course, take the trouble to know those rules and regulations. Okay, so we're going to end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.